you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
I'm George Chen.
And this is SupDoc.
On today's episode, we learned all about the fascinating world of wrestling with our guest, comedian Daniel Radford.
Did you know kayfabe refers to the portrayal of events within wrestling as real? Well, we've been kayfabing our listeners for years now.
Daniel has a podcast all about the world of wrestling called Tights and Fights on the Maximum Fun Network. So it made a lot of sense to talk to her about the 2018 doc Andre the Giant, based on the life of professional wrestler and actor Andre Rene Rizimov.
The film features professional wrestlers and media personalities such as Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Billy Crystal, as well as family members discussing Andre's life and giganticism. You can also watch this documentary on HBO. And just a quick reminder to please donate today on our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
And now here's Danielle. And we are here with Danielle Radford.
Hello.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
You brought us something delicious. What did you just treat us with?
I brought a spam musubi from the bus stop.
Well, it wasn't just at the bus stop, right?
Yeah, no, okay. It was at like this, although, I mean, bus stop meat is the best meat. Don't tell the guys that hit on me at the bus stop
right.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Ha-ha, ka-ching, ka-ching. But
ooh, that's
comedian,
bus stop meat.
Comedian Daniel Radford. Yeah, yes.
Pow, pow, pow. But there's
Beatboxer.
A little, there's a little market that's down by one of the train stations, and they do sandwiches, and they have a little deli counter, but they're also like, you can buy beer and wine and snacks and whatever for people in Koreatown who are, you know, in between, you know, transferring or
right.
school or whatever, looking to grab something quick. And one of the things they have is spam musubi, and they make it fresh there. And you can like watch them. They're just piling the stuff up because spam musubi is like, it's cheap, it's portable, it's delicious. They put this, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's this pickled salted plum. I've made it for people because I make musubi sometimes, and there are people who are vegan. And so a vegan version of that is to take this like salted amazing plum
Yum.
And you put it in there and then you mold it differently
yeah.
rather than like the spam musubi bowl.
You make your own sushi rice then?
Yes, I make my own sushi rice.
Damn.
Yeah, dude. It's easy. It's way easier than you think it is.
Did you watch Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
Of course I did.
Oh, that's a good God. One.
It's so good.
Don't you want to eat there?
I want to eat there and I want to be his best.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But I also, like, there are very few documentaries where I come out of it and I'm like, I don't want to be your best friend.
We're here to talk about the Andre the Giant. No, I'm just, but that,
no, that's a great segue.
Thank you very
much. I suck at segues. I appreciate that one. That's a good one.
But you chose Andre the Giant doc to
yes.
talk about, which
yes,
is
yes.
an awesome documentary. 2018 HBO release about the man, the myth, the legend, Andre the Giant.
Yes.
And we talked about this because you do a wrestling podcast.
I do.
That's awesome.
I have a wrestling podcast. It's me and Open Mike Eagle, rapper Open Mike Eagle, like on every top whatever list of last year for his album, Brick Body Kids Still Daydream. So good. He has a show out here in LA called The New Negroes, which is a comedy show.
We've had Baron on this show.
Yeah, with Baron Vaughn. Mm-hmm. He is incredibly smart and funny and talented, and he's one of those people where you're like, man, when people say you got it and they can't tell you what it is,
mm-hmm.
Mike's got it.
Okay.
Whatever it is, like yeah. that dude's got it. And it's him and Hal Lublin, who is another incredibly talented dude who does a lot of podcasts and does a lot of voices. He's Wide Whale on Venture Brothers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's also another one who's incredibly smart and talented and great, and it's us. And occasionally when one of us can't make it or just we want to have a full house, we also have Lindsay Kelk, who is she's a huge wrestling fan. She also runs a beauty podcast, and she is a best-selling romance novel.
Jesus.
And her romance novels are incredibly funny and smart and great. Like some fucking Nora Ephron like romance novels. Yeah.
And what's it called?
Hers?
No, your podcast.
Our podcast is called Tights and Fights, and it's on the Max Fun Network.
Oh, nice.
Sorry, I spent so much time telling you about how great my co-hosts were. I forgot to plug the podcast. But yeah, it's called Tights and Fights, and it's on the Max Fun Network.
So what is your relationship with Andre the Giant? Why did we pick this as your favorite wrestler? Is it someone you wanted?
Well, our relationship was salacious.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of porn.
Especially since it ended when I was in my child.
When you were just a kid.
So I am a huge fan of professional wrestling, and something I talk about a lot on the podcast was that I did not find professional wrestling very much during the Hulk Hogan era in the way that a lot of people did,
right?
Which is a great era, and that's when and I knew about it because everyone did, but I've had to kind of go back and look at wrestling in bits and pieces because I got into it during the Attitude Era, which is like The Rock, Stone Cold, Mankind.
Right. Just your generation versus slightly older generation.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, you know, I am of an age. So I was definitely a baby when that stuff was happening, but I was a baby. So if it wasn't Jem, I didn't care. And then I discovered wrestling later because one day I was watching it and I was like, oh, heroes, villains, spectacle, crazy feats of unnatural looking strength. This is a comic book. And so I got super into it because this was before an age when we just got to see comic books on screen.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so at the time it was like the closest I could come. And going back, but I loved Andre the Giant, not as a wrestler, but because I love Princess Bride. It's one of my Oma's favorite movies. Yeah. We used to watch it a lot. And I just loved the mythology of Andre because he has become more myth than man, which is something that they talk about a lot in the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then growing older, and when you hear more about him from his peers and from other people, and you realize how much, you know, he was larger than life, both obviously as a person, but also as a personality.
Right.
And so hearing from the people that knew him best about what a deep well of pain and sadness there was inside of him and how he was still able to go out and entertain, I think is something that has always kind of struck a chord with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has a lot of equivalency to comedy, comics. You know,
they can absolutely.
Comedians are well known for being tortured, dark souls. And then they come out and they're like, hey, it's the lights. It's the people, you know, and then backstage they're just like, ugh, I hate lights and people.
Right. And it's not necessarily everyone, but I will say there is a reason why I've done all kinds of stuff. I've been in bands. I'm a singer. I'm a classically trained opera.
Whoa.
I've done a bunch of things, but comedy appealed to me the most, and I've stuck with it the longest and had the most success with it, because it's the one where it's like, I don't need nobody else. I need me and a microphone and a stool. And half of the times I don't get the other two things I mentioned. It's just me.
Yeah.
And an audience. And even if it's an audience of my peers or if it's one person or I can say it into a microphone, whatever, it's fine. And there is something about not having to depend on anyone. Whereas with wrestling, it's all about being able to depend on other people and being able to depend on the person that you're working with, because it really is, you know, I hesitate to call it choreographed because sometimes people will work out everything that they're doing beforehand. But a lot of times it's just that you're working with someone who's been working as long as you have and you understand the language of being inside the ring. And so there is a moment in the documentary where Hulk Hogan talks about I mapped out the whole match and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's tight. And sometimes for these big matches, and it's a big match, they will take the time to do that. But very often it's just literally look, those two folks know exactly what they're doing and how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so the parts that rang true to me were when they were doing the parts of that very famous WrestleMania 3 match where they're throwing punches and doing everything. And he says that he hears Andre say body slam because that's how wrestling typically works.
It's calling an audible.
It's all audibles, especially now because the referee's major job inside a wrestling ring is to be a stage manager / voice of God. He is the voice of whoever is the booker, which is another word for director, but not quite. They're booking the stuff that's in the ring. And so oftentimes they'll be wearing a headset, and that headset will be connected to someone in the back who goes you know, this match is going too long or the crowd's not really into it. Change the ending to this. I changed my mind. Do that. Do this. Do that. And Vince McMahon very famously does that all the time. And so that was one of those things that really spoke to me, was when they were talking about how, like, Hogan wasn't sure if Andre was going to do the job for him. Mm-hmm. First of all, I guess I should ask, do y'all have any questions about wrestling and wrestling terms?
I have many.
that would make this documentary easier for you to understand.
Well, I understood.
Because I have answers.
Well, yeah, I did think about that scene specifically. I'm like, I didn't know what exactly was going on, but I got that Andre was in charge the whole time. Really? Like, well, even though he had to take the predetermined outcome, like, the Hulk knew that he could do whatever he wanted to Hulk.
And that was one of the great things about the documentary as well, is that typically when you're in the ring with someone, so there's something called being stiff. And that's when, so when you are wrestling, you have a pact, an idea that the two of you together are working to make the same result. And the same result isn't, the same result is just whatever is best for business.
Yes, anding.
Yes, anding.
I mean, it sounds like an improv thing.
It kind of is, yeah. And the result is going to be what someone else determines, and whatever is best is what makes a great match. Because people know that even if you lose, if you have a great match, that doesn't matter. You're still made, right? And so in the documentary, they talk about how if Andre didn't like someone, if he thought they were a loud mouth, and by loud mouth, they're typically meaning like if they thought someone was a backstage bully,
right.
If he thought someone was a dick, he was going to show you in the ring like, yo, I'm Andre and I'm here. I'm going to humble you.
Big John
because
Studd.
Because you can't talk to people that way. You can't be that way to other people. And so what he did to Big John Studd, there's two things that you can call it. You can call it being stiff, which is being stiff is when like, oh, you're actually hitting people. You're actually hurting people because that's the way that you work. There is also going into business for yourself, which is what Hogan was afraid he was going to do. Going into business for yourself is when you know that there's a way that the match is supposed to end, but I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go stiff and I'm going to hurt you.
Mm.
And I'm going to actually make this a wrestling match.
Right.
And one of the things they kept mentioning with Andre was the idea that, like, he was so big that if he decided to go stiff, there's nothing you can fucking do.
Right.
If he decided that he was going to go into business for himself, there's nothing that he can do. And that's why they talk about how amazing it was that he was so gracious and saying, look, I'm going to make sure everyone looks good. Yeah, at the end of the day, I'm going to go over, and go over is what it means to mean I'm going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, put me over or be over, whatever means, to do the job, which means to lose,
mm-hmm.
To make sure the other person wins. But it's also like putting someone over. You can do that on the mic by like,
oh, right.
Physically, you know, and you can do that by selling. And selling is when you're supposed to be injured by something.
Mm-hmm.
It's making it look like you're actually hurting.
Right, right, right.
And so when people would talk about in the documentary, like, oh, Andre was so great because he made sure to sell for me. He always sold for me. He always did that. Because they knew that Andre was always going over, because this was back during the era of kayfabe, which is a word that I don't know if they used very often in the documentary. Kayfabe is when we talk about wrestling being fake.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to think of it is that wrestling inhabits and their storylines inhabit a fictional reality. And that fictional reality is kayfabe. And so kayfabe itself didn't get broken until later when there was like the steroid scandal and all this stuff happened. But during that time, kayfabe was still very much real, wherein they pretended like everything that happened on screen was happening for mm-hmm. real.
Continuity, basically.
They led people to believe that everything was real. You couldn't travel together if you were supposed to be people who hated each other.
Yeah.
Even if you were like, and that was another one of the reasons why they stressed that, like, you can't, if you're not a wrestler or a referee, don't be in the locker room, mm-hmm. because that's one of the places where they can actually be them fucking selves.
Yeah, right.
Play cards.
Yeah. And other than like, you know, the fact that obviously sometimes they're fucking naked and they just don't want people in there while they're changing or while they're doing whatever. It's also the only place where they can like acknowledge their friendships and like mm-hmm. be buds. plan out a match, which might, like, you know, obviously there are certain things that get called on the fly, but then there are some things where you at least can be like, hey, we'll work out like some of the basic things and then we'll call it as it happens.
So it sounds like actually if Tonya Hart, if figure skating had a kayfabe, then Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan, that shit would have like worked out okay.
Yes, it would have.
Yeah, if there was kayfabe in there, then that definitely would have been a storyline.
Yeah.
Oh God, it would have been the perfect storyline. Best friends and then one turns on each other,
yeah.
Hire some goon to injure the other one, and then she comes back and wins it all. Yeah. That would have been the perfect wrestling storyline.
And it would have been a heel face turnaround too somewhere.
Yeah,
in there.
And also because it would have been I don't know, because people I feel like liked Nancy Kerrigan except for because what we call it when like when a heel turns face or a face turns heel, we call it a double turn. But what they had that was unique is because a lot of people didn't like Nancy Kerrigan.
No.
So or people liked Nancy Kerrigan, but like for Tonya Harding, a lot of people thought she was trashy and she was whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they had an unlikely friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the idea of her turning, which is what you call it when someone betrays a friend or whatever, or like turning on their friend, or when someone turns from face, baby face, good guy, to heel.
Which right. Andre bad kind guy. Of did, right?
Yeah, Andre turned heel. Yeah.
But so did Hulk Hogan. So Hulk Hogan, wasn't he originally a heel? He was originally a bad guy.
He's gone through several phases.
Oh, he has.
But like, and most people don't remember because a lot of his bad guy stuff was during the territory days.
Right, mm-hmm, right.
Which was another thing that I thought that they explained very well.
Outside of Canada, when Andre first came to North America, he was wrestling mainly in the Midwest. Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Detroit. In Detroit, he was actually called the Polish Giant. And in Minneapolis, he was called either Andre Rusimov or Andre the Giant Frenchman. The name Andre the Giant, the first time it actually happened was in Chicago. There was a promoter there who wanted to book Andre, so he called the promoter back in Montreal. So he said, you know, well, we call him Géant Ferré, Giant Ferré. So the promoter there started laughing and said, I cannot call him a Giant Ferré. You know, what's his real name? What's his, you know, first name? So they said, well, it's Andre. So, okay, we'll call him Andre the Giant there.
Here is the eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So Paco knows a bit more. He was actually at WrestleMania 3. So
no fucking way.
Yeah, Pontiac, Michigan.
But what was that like?
I'm the one that doesn't know much, but I could follow the documentary, so I could kind of pick up what they were putting down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was WrestleMania 3 like?
Yeah.
Well, imagine a 13-year-old boy going to his dream place and smelling sweat and beer. And I touched Andre the Giant.
You touched him?
I touched him on the shoulder.
I did not know this.
My buddy and I that I went with, we put our hands on his shoulder, and our hands looked like we were touching the side of an elephant.
Oh, I bet.
He was gigantic. And he wore that.
It's like that scene from Brick One Time.
Yeah, that singlet. With that barbarian singlet.
Yeah. So he walked by us, and on his left shoulder, we put our hand. So we went. We were gigantic wrestling fans. We had, as all boys did, and I'm sure girls did too, we had a makeshift ring in my buddy's backyard. Mm-hmm. My buddy's dad's a psychotherapist, and he could care less about wrestling. But he took us because it was
He should. It sounds perfect for him.
It kind of does. But he sat. We got basically on the floor seats, And we actually did. We were on the floor. And, Dr. Semroth, Dr. Semroth read the New York Times during the entire thing. He sat with his legs crossed and read the newspaper because he was just like, whatever my kid wants for his birthday. Funny. And we were going nuts. Because for me, like Jimmy Snuka, like Superfly Snuka, like I had like the British Bulldogs. I had my favorite people.
Right.
You know, I loved.
Rest in peace, both of them.
Yeah.
Snuka, I hope you didn't kill that lady.
Right. And Ricky the Dreamboat.
You're going to say that. That's the thing you say a lot with people who are dead.
Yeah. I hope you didn't kill somebody. But Ricky the Steamboat Dragon, like I had all my
faves. One that you never hear anything but lovely things about.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
really?
He's still, much like with football, with wrestling, a lot of people cognitively aren't necessarily all there.
Right.
But Steamboat is someone that like, he's still, every time you have him on a podcast, he's done Ric Flair several times.
Wow.
He's still very much there. He remembers everything and he sounds like a sweetheart.
You know who was our football coach for a little bit? George the Animal Steel.
No fucking way.
Yeah. Yeah, way.
At your high school?
He was a high school football coach.
What?
Yeah, in Detroit, yeah.
Some Kenny Powers shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
That's what he did. He taught high school, he was a high school football coach.
I knew about that part, but like the odds that it would be, in where?
Michigan, Detroit. Yeah, because it was Pontiac's right outside of Detroit. So George the Animal Steel was also a scout for the Lions. So he would go to different high school games and watch kids and stuff. So we met him all the time. He was super nice, super lovely guy, very hairy, awesome.
Very hairy.
Yeah. You remember when you eat the turnbuckle? He would like eat the turnbuckle sometimes.
The turnbuckle is the part of the ring that holds the ring together. So it's the ring post area.
Posts, yeah.
And so they cover the turnbuckles because it's essentially where everything comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be a real bad guy, you take the cover off of it and then you bash someone's head into it. And if you're a real fan, you ignore that their hand is actually going into it.
But you were talking about territories, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I know. That was something I didn't know anything about. I mean, we'd done maybe one other, like we did the Iron Sheik documentary, but they didn't get into that stuff at all.
And we did the Smashing Machine.
Oh, yeah. MMA, yeah.
Yeah, that is one of the things that is, because if you're a fan of Andre the Giant, this is, or even wrestling, a lot of the stuff is already lore. It's stuff you already knew.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they took so much time to emphasize that, like, he really was the king of the territories and what the territories were, and then how Vincent McMahon did away with that entire system, essentially.
It's genius.
And of course, Vincent McMahon agreed to be a part of it. And the winners are the ones who get to rewrite history
however they want. WWE is one of the producers, right? Don't they have a producing credit in this? I think I just read that somewhere.
Yeah, that's how you can be able to get their footage. And what that also means is that Vincent McMahon gets to come on and
Crypt Keeper his way through the whole thing.
I mean, he's...
And Crocodile Tear.
Yeah, he's one of those figures, and they're talking about doing a movie about him. Which is going to be in partnership with WWE Films.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He's going to be a producer on. But he is definitely a very divisive figure in wrestling. No one can deny that him and his family have... they were part of what made wrestling the worldwide global phenomenon that it is. It's also one of those things where it's like, well, with the advent of cable, had they not bought up everyone's best people from all the different territories, and the idea that he's like, well, they all came to me. Nah, dude. I mean, some of them came to you.
It's kind of like a poaching situation.
Yeah. It was poaching.
Well, he offered money.
He offered money. Yeah. And
that's what poaching is.
Yes, that's true. That's a good point.
And it's also like, if you're a dude, and especially I do appreciate that they emphasized that a lot of these guys in the territory system were getting older, and wrestling takes such a toll on you, especially the way they used to do it back then. And it's part of the way they're doing it now, which is why the territories, and I'm so glad that they talked about that, because now with indie wrestling, you are getting back, because indie wrestling is starting to be big again.
Mm-hmm.
And you are not even starting to be, it is big again. And we're not calling it the territories, we're calling it indie wrestling, but it works like the territories.
It works like bar shows or something, right? The way with comedy.
It works like bar shows with comedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are, other than the WWE, if you're looking for something, you know, there's TNA, which is a bigger promotion, but not quite WWE because no one is WWE. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., there's Ring of Honor, which is kind of the best of the best of the indies. And then there's Japan, which has New Japan and a bunch of different organizations. And there are also a lot of different great indie promotions all across the country.
Are they like live streaming or what are they doing?
Some of them are live streaming now. Some of them are getting to the point where they're recognizing that, hey, we can go on Twitch and then
Right.
Yeah. And then we can do video on demand and we can do other things. A lot of them sell DVDs. Like if you're going to see, like there's, I believe Rise is an all women's, which is amazing. I went a couple months ago and I'm going to probably go.
I was going to ask you about Glow actually.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah.
What I mean, did you see that doc or the Marc Maron vehicle?
I have seen the doc.
Should you call it the Marc Maron vehicle?
I have seen the doc. I have seen Glow. I have had a chance to interview some of the folks from Glow.
Nice.
So I interviewed the women who played the biddies, they're a comedy team. I'll have to find their names. I feel like a dick because I don't remember it offhand. But they are super funny. They're from LA. They do a lot of comedy. We had them in on the podcast.
Oh, fun.
We also had Awesome Kong, a.k.a. Karma, who was on WWE. Yeah. She was also on TNA. She is amazing. She is also one of the performers on there. And so I've gotten to meet a few of the people from Glow. And Glow makes me very happy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, the only one who really made it to WWE and the other stuff after Glow was, I want to say Victoria.
Okay. Relating this to what I got interested in watching, this is related to like these other issues we talked about, like head injuries and football and things like that.
Right.
Like the part of it where it's like, it's about labor practices essentially, or like stuff that's come up, I guess, about the fact that the WWE, no one's, everyone's a contract employee.
Yep, everyone's an independent contractor. Nope.
Like, a lot of what happened to Andre, it was like, if he had, like, he had money, but he, you know, didn't take care of all his medical stuff because of the sport.
Well, because there is no, with WWE, like, and now they've gotten way better because of a lot of things that happened last decade. Mm-hmm. Because of different injuries, because of CTE being in the news, because of Chris Benoit.
Did he do to kill himself?
And
after
he killed his family.
Okay. Different dude.
Some other people who had passed away, they got a lot better about being like, yo, if you ever worked for us and you need to go to rehab, we will pay for it.
Right.
Not
like SAG for them, or some of them are maybe SAG if they got in movies.
But you can't be in SAG if you're in WWE.
You can't
be. I mean, you can be, but only for your acting stuff, not for your wrestling stuff, which is essentially a combination of stunt performing, acrobatics, and but there is no union for them, and they will probably never be a union for them.
Wow, that's insane.
And no other benefits. Like if you don't have a union, at least you think you'd get some.
Well, no,
they do pay
for your medical. Okay. They have doctors on site. Mm-hmm. They've gotten better about it because they understand that bad publicity is bad publicity.
Right.
Also, something else has changed. So I don't want to just say that it's because of bad publicity. You have to acknowledge that. A lot of the great changes that have happened in WWE in terms of women being treated like people and not like objects and not like decorative whatever or just people to prop up men, but women wrestlers being acknowledged and all of this stuff. A lot of the fact that they are taking care of their wrestlers and their retired wrestlers, a lot of their improved storylines, it goes back to the fact that the WWE is a family business.
Mm-hmm.
It has been since the first Vince McMahon down to this Vince McMahon. And he was also, I don't know if you realized it because they never really said it, but in a lot of the shots where they're showing people interview Andre or people talking about Andre, Vince McMahon, before he bought out his dad, this Vince McMahon, our current Vince McMahon, he was also an announcer on the show.
I saw that.
And it wasn't something I think that they like really pointed out.
Like that looks like
that guy.
It looks like this guy, but
slightly the same. But right.
he did something.
The chin dimple is always a giveaway.
That chin dimple is such a McMahon giveaway. Yeah, it is so McMahon-y.
Yeah,
but so it is a thing.
You can put sour cream in that thing.
Ooh, you could for sure eat guacamole out of it. Just put a pestle to it and just smash up some avocados.
Pestle that face. Mm. I felt like doing that after this movie.
He wrestled too for a little bit, right? I mean, later on, he was in some matches, right?
All of the McMahons wrestle. I'll get there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're absolutely right.
I'm going to write it down so we don't remember.
So, it's a family business. Mm-hmm. And so Vince McMahon, around the time when the Attitude Era started.
I love that, the Attitude Era.
Right? They named it. Yeah. They name all their shit because they can. Like, that's the thing that always makes me laugh is when they're like, women are people now. It's like, nigga, it was always your company. If you said women were people before, it was your fucking company.
You could have said that 20 years ago.
Exactly.
The HR at the company. Yeah.
You could have done it any time, but that's fine. Like, they're all, this is the most. It's like, they're your records. Yeah. You're the only one keeping them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jake the Snake didn't have to just put a snake on the lady. She could have been a part of the...
She could have been a wrestle lady. Yeah. But so, during the Attitude Era, something happened called the Montreal Screwjob. Long story short, someone was supposed to, much in the same way that you remember how Hulk Hogan was afraid in the documentary, that Andre wasn't going to put him over, and Vince was like, he's going to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. There was someone who, and also going back to poaching and all this stuff, mm-hmm. it's circular. Time is a flat circle. how do I long story short this?
Just keep going.
Ted Turner, TBS, all those things, decides one day he wants to have a wrestling company. He buys WCW, which was televised, but was also one of the few of the territories that was around. It was televised. If you lived on the East Coast or in the South, there was more of a chance that you saw WCW than you saw WWE, just because of the way that cable worked.
Got it. Okay.
So a lot of kids are WCW kids, the Ric Flair kids. Mm. That also makes sense for why you see a lot of, like, you know, when you hear the Ric Flair drop, when you hear a lot of Ric Flair stuff in Southern rap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's why. Okay. Because for a lot of kids, it was all superstations, and superstations wore all Ted Turner. So Ted Turner decides, I want to get into wrestling, buys a wrestling company. It's like, he had been friends with Vince McMahon forever, and he was like, I'm going to get into your business. And Vince goes, well, you want to get into wrestling? I'm a sports entertainer. And Ted Turner goes like, oh, you think your dick big? Yeah. And so he starts just throwing around his Ted Turner money and buying everything. He buys an aged Hulk Hogan. He buys a bunch of other, like, very popular people from WWE, makes it a big deal, makes it seem like they're, like, doing an angle that involves WWE. And in fact, WWE sued because, like, he wasn't acknowledging that it wasn't an invasion angle.
Right. A different angle on the dangle. What year are we talking?
We're talking around 1995 to around 1997 or 8-ish. And so, so all of this is happening. There is a dude called Bret Hart, Canadian dude, all Canadian in as much as Hulk Hogan is all American. Eat your vitamins, say your prayers, wear pink, Bret Hart.
Drink a pint of maple syrup in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Famously had that, I think it was a Coca-Cola commercial where, like, the kid's like, Bret, and he, like, hands him the sunglasses or whatever. And so Bret is between a rock and a hard place. WCW is offering him a lot of money. He says to Vince McMahon, hey, I don't know if... And this is all documented in another documentary, which is amazing, called Beyond the Mat.
Oh, yeah, Beyond the Mat. Mick Foley's thing, right?
Mick Foley is also in that as well. Yeah, he's a huge part of that. I think that... I don't know if that was the ear thing or something else. No. I think that was the cage thing. Anyway, yeah. So Beyond the Mat, another fantastic wrestling documentary. And all of this is documented in it because they were following Bret at the time. And Bret's trying to think about what's best for his family. Vince, at this point, is struggling and hemorrhaging because he had had all of these aged superstars.
Right.
And he was doing something where it was very much like every wrestling thing was an occupation. You know, I'm the dude who works for the IRS. Right. I'm the guy that's the dentist. I'm the doctor. Yeah. I'm the barbarian.
Yeah.
And people didn't want that anymore. And he didn't realize that WCW came in and they started doing something different and that started working. And he also just didn't have the money to compete with Ted Turner because Ted Turner's Ted Turner. Not back then. Now, Vince is, they want public. Shit's going real well.
Yeah.
So Vince is like, well, I don't know if I can afford to do your contract or whatever anyway, so go ahead and go over to WCW. And so he is supposed to drop the belt to a very awesome, I guess the best thing you can call him is like a smaller, flippier...
flippier.
Gentleman in chaps named Shawn Michaels, whose song was all about how sexy he was. I'm just a sexy boy. It's a whole thing. And so he's supposed to drop the title to him. It's in Canada. He says, I don't want to drop it here. I don't want to drop the title here, even though it's like, I think it's a Mania or whatever. He's like, I don't want to drop it here. Can I drop it tomorrow night at the Raw after Mania or at the whatever after Mania? I don't want to drop it here. And Vince is like, sure. Before this, there had been a wrestler called, not Sunny, there had been a wrestler called Medusa, who was their women's champion. She is and was, still is, fucking dope. And this was for like the 3 seconds that they got some inspiration from how dope Japanese women's wrestling was. Joshi wrestling.
Oh, really?
Joshi wrestling in the 90s. A lot of the things that you see dudes doing today were perfected by women's wrestlers in Japan.
Always.
Killing
Hands
it.
Ahead.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Streets ahead.
Joshi?
Joshi.
Joshi.
Look it up. I can give you names. Bulacano, sure. I'll give you names. And so she left WWE as
WCW.
Champion for WCW. She left with the belt, shows up on WCW, tosses the belt in the trash. A couple of other people, Rick Rude, Lex Luger, because WWE was on a taped schedule, they would wind up, and WCW was live, they would show up on WCW live at the same time that they were on taped for WWE.
No.
And in fact, one of the fun things that WCW used to do is spoil what was happening on WWE TV.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Turner. I had no idea.
Ted Turner was a monster.
And this is Jane Fonda era Ted Turner.
Yeah, along with like Eric Bischoff and a bunch of other people who were incredibly competitive. And so because they were worried that Brett wasn't going to drop the title, and again, in the same way to bring it back to the documentary, that Hogan was afraid that Giant wasn't going to drop the title, they screwed him.
Wow.
And so they fast called a pin that was supposed to be a false pin. And the referee hands the belt. I believe he hands the belt. I don't think he takes it out, but I believe he hands the belt to Shawn Michaels and fucking runs out of the ring. This legendary referee runs out of the ring. Shawn Michaels doesn't know what's going to happen. He pissed. Or at least, and some
but
people
he got
say
the belt.
Some no, because that's not how it works.
Oh,
that's not how it works.
Oh.
You don't want to be a part of dirty business.
Oh.
And some people insist that he knew, and some people say he didn't. And in some interviews, he says he did, and in some, he says he didn't.
Jeez.
Looking at it, he's not that good of an actor.
Yeah.
He's great on the mic. I don't think he knew.
Yeah, he looks confused.
He looks confused, and he looks pissed. He takes it and goes. Vince comes out. Everyone comes out. Brett is confused and pissed. He starts writing the letters WCW in the air.
Wow.
Right. And so that is when the character of evil Mr. McMahon starts.
Oh.
Where, it's a character.
Sorry, it's a roundabout way to get there, but that part of it is really important because that is where the character of Mr. McMahon, wrestling McMahon, to bring it back to what you're talking about, that's where he starts. Because he goes on TV, because everyone's talking about this, and he does this infamous promo, which a promo is like anytime when you're cutting a promo or you're doing an interview against someone, it can either be in the ring or it can be against another person, but it's you passionately talking about why someone is wrong and you are right.
Yeah.
And he's like, I didn't screw Brett. Brett screwed Brett. And then he becomes Mr. McMahon, and Brett had also feuded against Stone Cold Steve Austin, whose star was rising at that point, and he had already done the infamous Austin 316 promo, and so then Vince and Austin started going against each other, and they started fighting each other, and like that became the big, and so when you think of Vince McMahon as a wrestler, that's the era that you're talking about.
Wow.
And then they brought in his kids, Shane McMahon, who is his son, who was this always like playboy with too much money. money and too many friends. And then Stephanie McMahon, who was this innocent chick until Triple H, who was a stoogie of Mr. McMahon, takes her to Vegas, drugs her, goes through a drive-through chapel and marries her. And she is supposed to be getting married to another wrestler named Test.
Uh-oh.
Wait, this is real or this is on camera?
Kayfabe. Okay. This is all kayfabe. Oh, this all part kayfabe. Is kayfabe. Okay. That other thing that we did was shoot. Uh-huh. Shoot is shooting from the hip, so it means real.
Yeah.
A shoot is shooting from the hip, real.
Got it.
Kayfabe. This is all kayfabe. Okay. We're back into kayfabe. And although
I was so confused.
Yeah, the Bret Hart stuff.
It's a kayfabe.
That's
hole. Kayfabe?
That's shoot. That's real shoot. That's a shoot.
Okay. The stuff with Stephanie McMahon and everything we're getting into now, and the stuff with Stone Cold Steve Austin, evil Mr. McMahon, the character, that's all kayfabe. And so he takes her in, marries her, whatever. And then we find out that she was evil all along, which is great because if not, that would have been really fucking terrible and illegal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was evil all along. And then she rises up and Shane and her battle over who's more evil. At one point, WCW was going down because Ted Turner was like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And he sold all of his shit. And they were like, why the fuck are we spending? Why is David Arquette here? Why are we spending? David Arquette became the WCW champion for a while.
What?
Fucking.
The actor?
The No Limit Soldiers were there. Dennis Rodman was there.
When was Trump going in the ring? When would that shit happening?
That was before that. After that.
Oh, after that?
Because this is the mid-90s she's talking about.
So now we're around year 2000.
Okay.
And so WCW tanks because they made really dumb decisions. And they were like, why the fuck are we spending all this money on wrestling? Why are we spending all this money on this dumb shit?
Mm-hmm.
And so Vince McMahon buys it, which is also part of why. And so they do this whole thing where in kayfabe, it's that Shane, his son, bought it. And so he's standing in the middle of the ring and they do a simulcast on what was supposed to be one of the last, like the last episode of a WCW programming. Shane McMahon shows up and everyone's like, what the fuck? If you don't read the magazines. And they simulcast it on, I believe it was Raw. And so it's him and Vince McMahon talking to each other. And it's this whole thing, starts a storyline, yada, yada, yada. And so, yes, wrestling for them is a family business. Right now, the people who are running it, Shane went away for a while. And this is shoot. This is not kayfabe.
Mm-hmm.
Although in kayfabe, he was obviously gone. Mm-hmm. He went away for a while. He was running like the Chinese version of YouTube. I think the thing is he wanted to prove that he could be his own man.
Right.
And he'd also been like wrestling these crazy things. Shane's thing is he will fucking find the highest thing and throw himself off of it.
Mm.
That is his thing. It is scary and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. Stephanie McMahon actually married, and they weren't married at the time and they weren't in a relationship at the time.
This is a shoot marriage. Okay.
They weren't married at the time during the kayfabe thing, or so they say. Mm-hmm. We don't know. But the dude that kayfabe married her, they fell in love and got real married.
Whoa, on set romance.
And his name is Triple H. Hunter Hearst Helmsley is his kayfabe name. His real name, who cares?
Has anyone had a kayfabe baby yet? Has that happened?
Yeah, that's happened.
Oh, okay.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Kayfabe babies and shoot babies. They both happen. And so what is happening right now is Vince is clearly starting to back away from the company. He has started his own kind of sports entertainment business because I feel like he feels like he already knows that this is going well.
Yeah.
And he knows that this is a generational thing and he wants to do his own thing and kind of have it be a side whatever.
Yeah.
Stephanie has been running this.
Okay.
She has essentially been running WWE for like almost a decade, right. Like a really long time. He's also been running it with her,
mm-hmm.
but like she has had a lot of power. He's the last word, but day to day, she's doing a lot of mm-hmm. it. And so is Triple H. And what makes this significant is it's the first time in the history of this company that someone who is actually a wrestler
was in it,
was a wrestler,
right.
has been wrestling, has been in it. And you can see the difference in the way that things that he is in charge of handle storylines. And there was a time when like people hated him because they were like, well, you're getting all these opportunities because you're married to Stephanie and you're holding people down and burying.
Jared Kushner style. Yeah.
Yeah. And burying is like a term that people use for like a shoot thing where they're like, oh, well, you have more power, so you're burying this other person so they can't be as big and blah, blah, blah. And maybe he did.
It's like what me and Paco do each other.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. You bury each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah.
But so But you can see a lot of these policies towards that.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a wrestler
because
in charge.
Because there's a wrestler in charge. Mm-hmm. And I've often said the best thing that ever happened to the women's division in WWE was Triple H and Stephanie having only daughters.
Yeah.
That's real. They truly only have daughters.
They truly only have daughters. Shoot daughters, which is funny because Shane is back now. And he only has shoot sons.
Oh, wow.
Which is really funny.
It took
you guys on a long road to get to this point.
I know. Yeah. I was like, what about the labor practices? we got into it. Yeah.
It's so hard with wrestling because it is such generational, years long thing.
Yeah.
A lot of these, it's family businesses for a lot of people. A lot of people are wrestlers and their daddies were wrestlers and their aunts are wrestlers. The whole Samoan dynasty, like The Rock, Roman Reigns, The Usos, Rikishi, like all of these like dudes, a lot of these dudes are all from like one family. Mm-hmm. Like wrestling can be and is for many people a family business.
How do wrestlers today differ or how do they differ? And what are some maybe, let's just talk about different. How do they differ from the wrestlers of the '80s, of the heydays of the '80s?
WWF
of the Andre the Giant,
yeah, right.
Yeah,
I would say aside from Andre, who obviously loved to drink because he hurt all the time.
Oh yeah,
I got hit by a bus. I can relate. I would say the wrestlers now, they do a better job of drug testing. Drug testing is huge. Mm-hmm. Drug testing is huge, and there are some people,
right,
who probably don't get tested as much as other people.
Gosh. Right.
But there isn't as much as like back in the day, it used to be like you hear these wild fucking stories of like, we were so drunk, we almost got thrown off the plane. Mm-hmm. We were all driving together and drinking and throwing
Iron
our cans.
Stories.
Yeah.
Like
and
that,
throw
yeah.
And we would race each other down the road in, you know, whatever, like some southern
drunk
town.
Driving.
And throwing cans
empties,
and stuff at each other and things like that. That doesn't happen anymore because of social media.
Right.
Like that stuff is gone.
That social media aspect would be very different in the Andre period too.
Right.
You would have been well fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of it is they are on their best behavior, but it's like there is also the way that WWE works now, the way that it worked before is like they were true independent contractors. Mm-hmm. You worked on your own time. You did your shit on your own time. Right. You work out, you work out. If you don't, you don't. Vince will just fire you if he doesn't like the way you look, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The way that it works now, they do work more with like companies to be like, hey, when you're in this town, we're going to have this gym that's just for us during this time so that all of you can work out in the day because we know that you have to. Not just to, whereas before, a lot of the working out was to maintain more of an aesthetic thing.
Yeah.
Now it's like a lot of the guys are smaller. They're not as big. And that is part of, I think, the Japanese and Mexican and indie influence. Because a lot of dudes are like, and I mean, they're still, look, if like some of
they're
them
cut.
Walked in, some of them walked in, it would be like, yeah, you're 5'10" of muscle.
Right.
But there aren't these like, you know, it really did used to be the standard was like 6'3" or 6'4", blah, blah, blah. And there is some of that, but there is also room for kind of smaller dudes too, to get in there, get in where you fit in.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Well, it used to have more of a freak show, sideshow element to it, right? Like the wrestling was like, you know, Andre the Giant and midget wrestling and like, you know, the Hulk Hogans of the world. And like, it seems like now it's just like regular dudes that just happen to fucking lift weights.
And also, it's called minis wrestling. It's not.
What is it?
Minis.
Oh, okay.
And that is still really big in Mexico, but the difference is when you would see that kind of like quote unquote slur midget toss like thing here, it would be like, oh, it's funny. Look at him. Whereas in like in Mexico, the minis can fucking work.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And those matches are real fucking matches. And much like anything else, like those dudes are, it's generational where it's like, you'll have dudes who look, my dad was a wrestler, his dad was a wrestler, and they fight other wrestlers. And it's not like this joke angle, and WWE has done it because they've hired dudes like Hornswoggle and like other dudes who have been like little people, and they've clearly just been hired for the, like, get right. it factor.
Yeah.
But, like, in other places, again, in Mexico, and I'm sure there are places where minis aren't treated as well, but in most of the stuff that I've seen, like, it's a real fucking show.
Yeah.
Like, they go in there and they fucking wrestle. Yeah, and it's amazing.
That's awesome. One of the things about the Andre story that I thought was interesting, there's a lot, but his handler guy,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like I never heard that story before. Like I've heard a lot, like this documentary didn't give me a lot more information than I already knew.
Yeah. It's not one of those things like with the Ric Flair documentary where it's like, you've heard some of those stories, but a lot of those are brand new and they really got into. There's a difference between the kind of documentary you can do when someone is alive and is willing to bare their whole soul and tell you everything.
Yeah.
And the kind when someone's been dead for a few decades and people don't want to be disrespectful to their friend.
Mm-hmm. But when his friend was saying, like, the locker room was earned, like, that's for wrestlers.
It's for wrestlers and it's for refs. That's it.
And he went in thinking he was somebody. Remember that story?
Remember, there are a lot of people who work in wrestling, especially now, and even back then, because there are wrestlers, there are referees, there are also ring announcers.
Oh, right.
There are also bookers. There are also managers people who...
Writers too, right?
Yeah, there's writers. Right. Yeah, no, there are a lot of writers now.
Oh, yeah.
And the same way that reality TV has writers. There are a lot of writers
Have
now.
Have you ever known a writer for wrestling?
Yeah. I think he's talked about it. Matthew McCarthy used to write for...
I feel like... I don't know if I can say his name. Never mind.
Bob Mould?
Bob
Mould did it.
Yeah.
There's been a few people who have written. Yeah. Patrice O'Neill wrote for it for a while.
Way.
Yeah, he's talked about it.
That's awesome.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
What?
After his heyday of being Freddie Prinze Jr., he was a fucking writer for WWE.
What? Would you do it? You would do it in a heartbeat.
Fucking please.
Yes, okay.
Please.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm shooting from the hip here.
Do the indies do these kind of storylines and arcs too?
They do. And now that it's easier for them to be able to do... things online, on Twitter, on anywhere, it becomes easier. And especially, here's something that's really interesting that's happening with a bunch of indie dudes. I'm going to long story short this. There is a guy named Cody Rhodes who is the son of legendary wrestler Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, Dusty Rhodes.
And he is part of a faction that is called the Elite, who is part of a bigger faction. And I know you guys don't at me. I know what's happening with that, but I have to make this quick.
It's for me. It's not for you. It's for George. It's not for you guys.
And
I know
so
about
they're part
stuff.
Of a bigger faction called the Bullet Club. And they are indie dudes who go around everywhere. They worked Ring of Honor. They would work Japan. They would work in different places. But they would have a storyline that would go through all of them. And so what they would do is weekly, they would put out these half an hour episodes of things that would tie everything together. And it would be like half... behind half like road diary, which would be real shit. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we're waiting here. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. And then half of it would be storyline that would help move the story along, because that's the kind of thing that you can do now that you have YouTube. And so it's very easy for these. Before, WWE was one of the only places where you could have this like through line, but you can say like, look, I want to have a through line that takes me throughout, no matter which indie promotion I go to, no matter what country I'm in, this is the story that I'm doing. And now with YouTube and with Twitch and with all these other places, you can do that as an indie wrestler. It's a very good time. There are
indie
wrestlers.
You gotta keep track of your continuity like somehow with like, I don't know if there's like a master, a master continuity that everyone has to refer to? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah. For them, it is. Yeah. It's a way for them to be like, it doesn't matter if we're in Japan, it doesn't matter if we're doing Ring of Honor, it doesn't matter if we're doing PWG, which is in Reseda, it doesn't matter if we're doing wherever we are, this is what's happening with our group. And these are the interpersonal conflicts that are happening with our group and the conflicts that are happening with people outside of our group in order to keep, because they have recognized that along with loving wrestling and being into wrestling and the physicality, part of the thing is the, like the story. That's a huge part of the appeal. And so they figured out a way to do that where you can still follow them even though they're not with one company that can produce all of these things. And they've discovered also that like you can get a cheap camera, you can do it on your phone. That doesn't matter. What matters is that you're telling a story.
Right.
And they became very popular. And some of them already were, like the Young Bucks are a tag team of brothers who have been popular forever. all of their shit sells out in like major stores. Cody Rhodes shit sells out. Bullet Club stuff sells out. Like, it does. You can be an indie wrestler these days and make money.
Vincent J. McMahon, Vince Sr., was one of the real power brokers in those days in professional wrestling. He had New York. We say New York. The territory ran up and down the Atlantic seaboard from Bangor, Maine to D.C.
My dad first found out about Andre because of the exposure he was getting in Canada. Someone said, Vince, you have to get your hands on this guy. He's an extraordinary attraction. So my dad met with Andre, and they hit it off really, really well. And my dad started booking Andre. My dad built the way the public looked at him now as an attraction. He was a giant attraction.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Professional wrestling, much like comedy or stand-up comedy, the only way to get better is to fail in front of people. That's the only way. And you can practice at home. You can write jokes at home. You can practice in front of your mirror. You can practice moves and stuff in a ring. There are rings where you can do that. But learning how to adapt to a live audience is such an integral part of both comedy and professional wrestling. You can only learn how to do that by failing in front of people.
That's so interesting. I never thought about the parallels between these two things. But
yeah,
it
we're
is,
basically the same thing.
We are all, yes, we are in the family. The same. Yeah. No,
I'm basically Hulk Hogan, but like, but like, I like black people.
Oh, nice. Nice. Were you, never mind.
No, please. Oh, you know, you can ask this. I'll get into it, my friend. It was weird to watch him doing it, and I understand because he's such an important part of the Andre the Giant story, but I'm also like, we cannot get back into the normalization of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
and so he apologizes for saying that he doesn't want his daughter to date N-words.
Yeah.
He said that.
Yeah, yes, I kind of remember that. I was also, I didn't watch it, but there's that other documentary about how he helped bring down Gawker with Peter Thiel's money.
Yeah.
So he got problems with that guy, too.
Yes, of course. Peter Thiel's a piece of shit, man. There's
a true heel.
Yeah, indeed.
Pure heel. Picking it up.
See?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting finding out about Andre's early life from this doc. This is the stuff I didn't know. Yeah. Like Jean Ferrer or Ferry or whatever his name was, you know, and the different like.
Oh, yeah. That's like a French like legend, kind of like a Paul Bunyan type.
Or like a Mark Henry or like, which there is actually a wrestler. It's fine. And like, but no, it is kind of like that thing of like the strong man who can do what men can't.
Right. And how he'd go to different areas and they're like, your name's going to be like Andre the Wrestler. And then they're like, well, you were Andre the Wrestler last time. Now you're Andre the Giant.
Well, that is so much a part of the territory system.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows if you're a dude who runs a territory, and they were all dudes.
Yeah.
yes. You know what's going to work in your territory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you understand fully in the same way that, like, as a comic, you understand that, like, you can't do regional jokes about Silver Lake if you're going out to fucking Milwaukee.
But they still do. I'm going to Canada. I don't know what to do. I have to scrap everything.
They still
everything.
Do. I still see LA comics in Sacramento talking
about
the
410. You guys like free healthcare?
Right. You know, or that thing where you go to a town and you're like, what's the city that no one likes?
Yeah, I'm gonna
so
bag
that you
on
can
them.
Like make your joke fit into like where they live. And they go like,
Glendale.
I get you. Except, of course, in LA, everyone would be like, where do all of your Armenians live? And everyone's like, what the fuck is an Armenian?
Yeah. That's right.
But yeah, no, so it's like that, where it's like everyone knows what is going to work best with their customer base and with their territory. And so while they all work together, and it really was a big deal that Vince McMahon, the not this one, but the other one.
The senior junior.
He's the junior, I believe. I believe that this Vince McMahon is the third.
Okay, third.
And so there is a reason why it was a big deal that he was like, yeah, you can have my special attraction. And it's like, well, yeah, because it makes you... Sometimes in business, you do things because you're like, this doesn't hurt me any, but... And it also additionally makes me look like a magnanimous person, mm-hmm. because they were right when they were talking about how, like, when you have an attraction like that, there's only so many times right. that you can put that attraction out before it gets market, old and right. people don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. And so it's seen as, oh, well, it was so great of him to let us have him. But it's like, well, what the fuck else is he going to do? Right. And what the fuck else was Andre going to do?
Exactly.
Was he going to just sit at home?
No.
Because no one gets paid to sit at home.
No. Mm-hmm.
And no one gets paid enough to sit at home.
And what else are you going to do at 7'7", 400 pounds or whatever he was?
7'4", 520 pounds.
Jesus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it seemed like the documentary had variable heights, but he was growing, I guess.
Well, he was growing thing. And
he was growing at the age of like 45 or whatever. He was still like,
he was still growing for a minute, but also, wrestling heights and weights are negotiable.
Yeah, they move.
Kayfabe.
Kayfabe. Yeah.
I'm gonna start yelling that whenever I do anything inappropriate.
Kayfabe.
I thought it was funny too, is when they mentioned like he hated Randy Savage.
Oh yeah,
and the Iron Sheik.
Loud mouths.
Yeah, I thought that was.
And both of those guys were super over, and I'm sure. And again, it's one of those things where this is your boy. Your boy is dead. You're not gonna get up there and be like. Sometimes he will pet it.
Yeah,
this is like the Sam Kinison documentary problem in a way, too.
A little bit. Right? Yeah, retrospective docs are a little tough for people because they're not going to...
Like, sometimes he will pet it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sure that part of it is when you go in there and I don't want to say because I wasn't there, but Andre obviously was an attraction and he was a sweet dude, but both of those dudes were also like Iron Sheik... was good on the mic in a way that he needed to be at the time. Mm-hmm. Macho Man is like one of the best that there ever was on the mic. And when they say he didn't like loud mouths, part of me is like, well, I'm sure that part of it is he doesn't like bullies in the locker room.
Right.
And anyone who gets to a certain big boy point can be. And that's why another weird divergent thing. So The Undertaker, who is The Undertaker, he's obviously a big man. He used to hold like a wrestler court so that when people were shitty to each other in the locker room, when people were shitty to each other in the locker room, they would hold court and you would have punishments and stuff as a way to like keep people from being too shitholy or asshole.
Shoot court.
And that was part of the reason why, oh my God, I'm sorry. That was part of the reason why with Shawn Michaels and some of the dudes he ran with, they were called the Click. Triple H was part of that Click. Some dudes who went to WCW were part of that Click. And they wound up being like the cool dudes who were almost like above all that stuff. And they wound up like really getting the ear of Vince McMahon, and Vince would do a lot of what they wanted to. And that's another reason why someone like a Bret Hart didn't want to necessarily put Shawn Michaels over in Bret's own like home country.
Right.
Because of the fact that they were like not necessarily seen as team players behind stage. And they also did something, this is very quick, I'm so sorry. They also did something that was called the curtain call when a lot of them left to go to WCW. They broke kayfabe in ring.
Mm-hmm.
And like we're all hugging, even though it was like a match where they were supposed to hate each other and like holding up their hands and stuff. And they all left. And Shawn didn't get in trouble, but Triple H did get in trouble because he was the low man on the totem pole at the time. Wrestling can go on forever.
Also, just like if you're a star, people just kind of cut you slack no matter what.
But the thing with Andre is when you were in the ring with him, he bigoted you.
Yeah.
And he's always going to be until he wasn't anymore and he had to stop. Yeah. But at that point, he was Andre. What the fuck are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be a dick. Don't take advantage. Right. And then also, and they don't talk about this, but I have to believe as a person who tries not to be petty with her whole heart, but will occasionally yell at someone with zero followers online. Mm. I have to believe that occasionally there were times when he would just like squeeze a little too hard just to remind you that he's there.
Yeah. You know? Well, someone in the doc, I think it was Vince, said we're not a business of tough guys. We're a business of entertainment.
Yes.
Yeah. So stop being a fucking dick and go along. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Go along. Not even just go along to get along. Go along to make everyone money.
Yeah.
If you're telling, it's like any other kind of actor. Like, you know, I don't know how Infinity War is going to end. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it on like Tuesday and then review it and it's going to be tight. But like, when does this go up?
After Infinity War came out.
Tight. So I recorded this before Infinity War came out. But
pretty sure Hawkeye is going to play an important role.
So no spoilsies because I haven't actually seen it yet. But we're going to go ahead and say that if Thanos is the bad guy and we know that there's maybe one to two things with Thanos in it, eventually, and then that they're going to continue the newest phase of Marvel, he's going to be defeated. We don't know if he's going to die. We don't know what's going to happen to him. We don't know if it's in this Infinity War or in the fourth movie. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that somehow he will at least be pushed back.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think Josh Brolin is like, well, fuck you. That ain't realistic.
Yeah.
I'm a purple nigga in this chair. Like, that's not how it works.
No.
It's the same way for wrestling. Yeah. Like, it's a story.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's all about telling the story.
I'm just surprised it's Josh Brolin. I thought it was Ron Perlman this whole time.
Yeah. I mean, not wrong. But so, not Ron Perlman.
Not Ron Perlman.
But right. So that's what it is about wrestling. It's mm-hmm. like, if you're making a good story.
Yeah.
You don't care, man. You're getting paid.
Exactly.
You're getting paid. You're doing what you love, and it's all about the story.
Yeah. I mean, you're living your dream. I mean, like, if you're living your dream, go up there and fucking do what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Make some money.
Do the dudes that open for Dave Chappelle, like, come out and hit him with a chair in real life because they want to fucking take over the like, headlining slot? No.
Yeah.
They're making good money.
They're not shooting from the hip.
Yeah, and they know they'll get there.
Exactly.
If only they had a glandular disorder to make them better comedians.
And then the Princess Bride shit was pretty interesting in the stack. That stuff I didn't know either.
Right.
Like, they had a drop Robin.
Oh, Cary Elwes looks weird.
Yeah.
Who looks better, him or Vince? I mean, yeah.
Somehow Vince had less work, and I don't know how that's possible.
That is true.
And I love Cary Elwes, so maybe it's just one of those things where it's like I'm looking at him from a teenager's.
He had a lot of makeup
He looks kind of eerily like Uncanny Valley young Cary Elwes.
But
yeah, it's very Uncanny Valley. It's definitely very like that Final Fantasy movie where you're like, meh.
The eyes don't quite turn
it's
all
like
the way.
It's like Polar Express.
But like the moment where they're like, they had to drop Robin Wright from Wires.
Yeah. Because
he couldn't. And she's like 110 pounds and he's Andre.
Right.
And couldn't like hold on to her and stuff.
Oh, man.
Stop that rhyming. I mean it.
You know, and there are a couple of big guys now that WWE has always been, and I call it like, instead of chasing Amy, I call it chasing Andre.
Mm.
WWE continues to try to make dudes into an Andre. There's a guy called Big Show, who they used to call the Giant, who kayfabe was Andre the Giant's son.
Shut up.
He's a very
Big
sweet
Show.
Man, and he's very, very talented. And he's also swapped in between companies, and he often swaps alignments, and it's weird. But he's like a big dude, and he doesn't have the pituitary disorder that Andre did.
Yeah.
But he's also a very large man, but he's very, very funny, and he seems to come off very, very sweet, and like he really cares about the business. And he is at a point now where he's older. People are like, well, why don't you just retire? You only show up every couple of months, like not even months. You only show up like maybe twice a year.
Mm.
And he has done a lot of work on himself, understanding that like, yo, I'm fucking, I think I don't remember what he's billed at. And again, billed at weight is all fucking kayfabe.
Yeah.
Billed at height and weight. But I want to say that he was always billed at like 7 foot, maybe like 450, 500.
Jeez.
And so he has done a lot of work to like try to take some of that slack off of his bones, because he's like, I would like to live longer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's also a dude from India called the Great Kali, who clearly, I don't know if it's been talked about. I didn't research that before this, because Great Kali's not good at wrestling, but I do wish him well. he clearly has, I think, the pituitary thing that Andre the Giant did.
Acromagaly or whatever.
And he's from India, and he, again, is one of those dudes who seems like a very, very sweet man. Physically, he is smaller. Mm-hmm. I think he might be around the same height, but like he's not as thick. Because maybe, I don't know, I don't want to speculate, but I think maybe he had like the, whatever the tumor pressing issue or whatever it is, he might have had that taken care of. But WWE was pushing him big for a while. It just didn't work out. WWE loves day big dudes. Yeah. Right now, day big dude is, there's Brock Lesnar, which, whatever.
Right.
It's fine. And then there's Braun Strowman, who I think... Here's what's disappointing me about what's happening now, is because they were realizing that you can make someone be a big legend without them having to hurt themselves and be too big to live. You can make them a legend just by telling us they are, because that's your job.
Right.
So they would do things like make it where he would like fucking take down ambulances and like all this stuff. And
CGI.
Or like, you know, wires and pulleys and fucking like gimmick things or whatever. It's like, that's all I need. Man,
yeah,
I don't need nobody to kill themselves.
Right,
I don't need nobody to be like an unsustainable to do a job that's unsustainable with their body type.
Yeah,
just give me the sills.
God,
man.
What was the surgeries that Andre was having near the end? Was it back surgery?
Well, he had a back surgery. He was supposed to have a bunch of others, but I don't know if he did. Gosh. He had to have an ankle surgery.
Knee. Oh, that knee shit. Oh, yeah. God.
They showed close up of all of his like scars and shit, and then he just.
And I will say this. If you are a wrestler and you've been wrestling for, at that point, he'd been wrestling for 15, 17 years, that's just your fucking life.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's just your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Knee surgeries, neck surgeries, back surgeries, elbow, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And then
stitching
just
together your bones, fixing your spine, putting your bicep back where biceps go.
Ugh, Jesus.
Fucking Vince McMahon one time fucking tore his quads.
Ugh.
Jumping into the ring.
Ugh.
He was doing a running jump
and
slide, which is like a normal thing. And the way that he did it, he fucking shredded his quads.
Oh, jeez.
Just running and jumping can be like just getting into the ring and doing what you do every day can be dangerous.
Yeah.
It is a dangerous thing.
Then they have those ridiculous cage matches stuff where they're falling from heights and like.
Well, Mick Foley has had to be rebirthed from scratch.
Yeah, he's like a Frankenstein at this point.
He got a new hip, though, and he looks great.
Have you seen the Santa Claus doc? Where it's a doc that he did about people who play Santa Claus around the country.
Right. Well, he also, I think, I am good. I haven't seen it yet, but it was when he was still in pain. And I don't like to see, because it was bad. Like, he couldn't move very well, and he, like, needed to have both knees replaced, his hips replaced. Mick Foley was one of those dudes who was, like, he was hardcore back when hardcore was a thing we did. One of his ears was, like, popped off because he got, like, he was in between ropes, and the rope fucking, twisted and popped off his ear. He's the one that, like, fell from a crazy heights during the Hell in the Cell on attacks, and he wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And they tried to legitimately stop the match, and he was like, no, I'm good. And his like fucking family was in the front row.
Oh, right. Yeah, his daughter or something. Like
his family, like his kids.
I'll
his
see
kids,
that.
Like
I'll watch that.
Yeah.
I think that's also featured on Beyond the Mat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like the business aspects of some of this stuff was interesting to me. And then just like you mentioned, like this thing of like seeing how much pain he was in, that he had to be drinking all the time, like the amount that he was drinking, it was just self-medicating.
Right. And that is something that people talk about a lot when they talk about Andre, like, oh, he's such a party animal. He's such a ladies man.
Right.
He used to drink all the time. Oh, Andre could fucking drink a keg with his bare hands. Andre could this, Andre could that. And it's like, Andre hurt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Andre in pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both mentally and physically. Because they talk about both like just the toll that being in that
sit anywhere
right the toll that being planes, in that body and doing wrestling, and people already, again, anyone who's 15 years into wrestling you hurt all the time,
right?
Unless you're getting like maintenance surgeries, and then you have to take time off for those.
Yeah.
But also the pain of just being a big dude and like a world that was not built for him, mm-hmm. and having to contort yourself and make yourself smaller.
Yeah.
Combined with also the emotional pain of something they got into a lot was the idea that if you were any other kind of wrestler, if you were any other kind of heel, if you were any other kind of person, if you were Muhammad Ali, if you were famously, there's a story about Marilyn Monroe where she's doing an interview with someone. And I think that she's just on a train in New York and no one recognizes her because she's not Marilyn it up.
Yeah.
And she's talking to someone and doing an interview. And again, I believe it was a train in New York, and they're walking outside and she goes like, "Oh, do you want to see Marilyn?" And he's like, "Yeah." And literally all she does is like, she fluffs her hair, she stands up straight, and she becomes fucking Marilyn. And no one was paying attention to her. And all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. Like, they're getting flocked by all of these people.
Yeah.
And that's something that like other folks have been able to do, either with like hoodies or sunglasses, right. or hats or whatever. Andre can't do that because Andre is always going to be, you know, look, even if his build, height, and weight is 7'4", 500 whatever pounds, that's still,
it's pretty big.
You're still Andre the Giant. You've still got that jaw, you've still got the way that you look. There is no way for him to hide.
No.
Yeah. And the emotional toll that must take. And so that was something about the documentary that I found to be very interesting, because a lot of times you hear about people talking about what a gentle giant he was and how much fun he was and what a partier
Which
he was.
Does a gentle giant feel like
condescending kind of, and weird?
As very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He also didn't need to hotbox people with his farts and elevators. So
I would.
Yeah.
Look, that's if I awesome. Was Andre the Giant and people were already fucking treating me like I'm a sideshow attraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
My butt's at your face. Yeah. I'm farting in your face.
I've earned this shit. Literally.
And also, considering the fact that, and they talk about like his language skills, like
right.
English was like his, I don't even know if it was his second language. It was a couple languages because he was from France. But also because of the way that he's built, like he's not like...
His palate.
Yeah, his palate and everything. Mm-hmm. He's not like a great speaker. And there is so much power, and you guys know this, in the ability to make someone laugh. How does it make you feel to make someone laugh? And maybe physical stuff is what you have to make people laugh. And maybe sometimes it's just a fucking fart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there, and that's the joke that he had. And that's why he could keep doing it. Cause like, maybe he can't control what's going on with his body. Maybe he can't do it, you know, physically. Maybe he can't do it with his mouth, but maybe he can fucking make people laugh with a fart. And how much power is there again? And just making people laugh. Like, that's, I get it.
A lot. There's a
Although,
lot.
Although like, man, don't fart around me. But,
yeah.
Like, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, man, fucking who doesn't want to be the source of someone's laughter? It's the best fucking feeling in the world.
Amen.
We gotta cast this doc.
I don't really have much.
I can't think of
anyone to be him.
No,
first of
me
all.
Neither.
No one. Ron Perlman. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Every big dude for years has been Ron Perlman. That's all that's been happening. Well,
so my ideas for it, because that you can't find anyone who can do it, but it's also because what I just mentioned about how Andre's like, he's not the best at talking, and it's something that people know. He does speak French and he doesn't speak English as his first language. You need someone who can really convey everything physically. I was thinking either like Doug Jones in a suit, because he's tall, but like he can also be on stilts or like whatever you need him to do, or CGI Andy Serkis.
Mm-hmm. Oh
yeah.
Well, did you see City of Lost Children?
Yeah, I love that.
That dude.
Oh, which dude? The, is there a big dude?
The big dude.
Yes. Is that Ron Perlman? I want to say that is also Ron Perlman.
No.
Let me look
is
it
Is that
up.
Ron Perlman?
I feel like every time you see a big dude.
Yeah. I think everyone's Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I think everyone's Ron Perlman. Who would be like Gene Okerlin, do you think? Who could play mean Gene Okerlin in a...
He's a...
Well, what's great about mean Gene is like it can literally... be Paul Giamatti.
Perfect.
Oh, very
Paul
nice.
Giamatti would perfect. Be a great mean Gene.
That's perfect. Who could play Hulk Hogan? Let's think about Hulk for a second.
It depends on what era you want him in. But honestly, I think Brolin. Depending on what era you want him in.
Whoa, that's
I think
really good,
Brolin
too.
Brolin would be a really good... I know
and
that he's shorter,
commits.
But you can cheat
he
it.
Yeah, too, yeah.
Yeah, you can cheat it.
Wow, that's really good.
Vince McMahon.
See, that's okay. Vince McMahon, it's a little tough.
I think Vince McMahon is Hugh Jackman.
Oh, my God.
I have always
Jesus
thought
Christ.
That Vince McMahon Whoa. Was Hugh Jackman.
That's good.
I was going to say Robert Durst, but...
Robert Durst? Because of his burping?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And his killing of people?
I think that Hugh Jackman could fucking nail
That's
Vince McMahon.
Really good.
And he's also like a friend of WWE. He's hosted some shows for them. He's hosted, because occasionally they'll have celebrities come in and host Raw.
Right.
I think that you fucking give him whatever black hair dye that Vince uses, that Just for Men bullshit that Vince uses on himself. I think he could do the strut, strut.
That's really good. That's awesome. Good job.
I've thought about this.
Yes, I think you think about wrestling.
Well,
maybe.
Danielle, a little bit. It's been kayfabe great having you here.
It's also been shoot great. She's going to bury you.
I turned it around. You're still the heel. I saved it.
Oh my gosh. Listen to our podcast. Thanks, folks.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.